Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Sell More Books Show. This is episode 330. I am your host, H. Claire Taylor. Today, Brian is taking a little vacay, a little R&R. So I'm joined by our excellent guest host, Becca Syme. She is the author of the Vanjie Vale Cozy Mystery Series and is probably best known from the Write Better Faster consulting services, right? You do classes, consulting services.
Classes, coaching, yeah.
Yeah, welcome, things. Becca.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love the Sell More Book Show. And hello to Brian. We will miss you, but I'm super psyched to be here today because Claire's one of my favorite people. So we're going to hang out and be cool together, clearly.
Be cool. Be cool about self-publishing.
Be cool about self-publishing. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. So what are you working on? What's been going on in Becca's world?
Just this last weekend, we were supposed to have a conference here where I live in Montana. And of course, pandemic version turned into online and it was amazing. Like I was actually surprised by how phenomenal the online experience was. Just the development and stuff, I expected to be okay, but also all of the social and connecting and networking. I was surprised at how much we did because we mailed boxes to people that they opened. And so we would get online every morning and do an unboxing together every day and then chat for like half an hour. And we had a Slack channel. And so I feel like it was as close to in person as we could get. And it was a lot of fun. How about you?
Well, I've got a few things going down the pipeline. I actually met with someone for a story alignment this weekend who was part of your conference and had glowing,
oh yay,
glowing reviews of it.
Nice. So, yay. I'm glad to hear that.
It's really fascinating how people are adapting online.
Yeah.
And making it meaningful gathering rather than just, you know, okay, show up.
Yeah.
Maybe you're wearing, or maybe you're not, and a cat.
Pants were optional, which is the great thing about Zoom. Like I've never been to a conference where pants were optional until this one, and it was awesome. But I've done a couple of virtual conferences, and I feel like people are being creative, right? Like I think they're taking the opportunity to think about what have we done that served people and what have we done that we could replace, and then doing the creative cool stuff. And I love that people are trying new things because it's like, no one wants this. No one's happy about it. So like, let's try to make the best out of a bad thing. So it was cool. I liked it.
I love the unboxing idea. That's fantastic.
It was so fun. It was so fun. I loved it.
Great, great. Well, before we jump in, I have a little announcement. I have a free course that I launched, I think last week. I was beta testing it with a few people, and I'm really excited about it. So this is the Indie Author Alignment 5-Day Foundation course. And basically what I am trying to do with it is take people and make sure that they're creative values and their persona and the themes of their books and their protagonists are all kind of in alignment so that every, you know, you kind of clear out some of the obstacles and make your life a lot easier. That's what I've been doing. Obviously, if you know anything about what I do, it has a lot of Enneagram involved, talking about core motivation
yes.
in it.
Yes.
But so it's a 5-day course. If you go to www.ffs.media/foundation. You can check that out. Totally free. It's on Teachable. It's just there. You work through it. You do some journaling questions. You can leave comments. You can email me. Really interested to get feedback on it. So I hope everyone does that. And then I also have a pre-order going for this course I've been working on, Supercharger Series. So that offer is good through August 1st, and that is a free story alignment if you buy the course.
And so this I have to say, I just signed up for this. This was funny because when I was going through the, I click on links just by nature and I was like reading and I thought, this will be a fun story to tell Claire when we're in the middle of this, is that I signed up for your course in the middle of prep for class because it starts in what, like 2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've done this alignment before with story with Claire, and it's amazing. There was a comment on the sheet that said one question. And I really do think that's the key, is like, because of how you ask questions, you can get down to it so quickly. And so I'm super psyched to see how the series stuff goes.
Yeah, I'm really excited to finish this course and have it ready. Yeah. Basically, it's going to be like walking people through sort of, like you said, the questions to ask to make sure that you have a really good foundation. I know that a lot of people listening are probably pantsers and don't want to plan. And you aren't going to be planning out the whole series. It's not a plotting series. It's just about like wrapping your head around what the story is going to be and feeling really excited about getting to that ending. So yeah, that's something else. And that's at ffs.media/supercharge-your-series. Yeah, you can jump on the free course first. So I figured, oh, Brian's not here with all his plentiful offerings. I can jump in and offer something this week. So
nice.
There it is. All right. So then we have the winner of my Supercharger Story course this week, and that is Flyover. Flyover. I hope you don't fly over this offering. Oh, sorry. I had to fill in for Brian again.
Yeah.
Email me at contact@ffs.media and I'll get you set up with that course. Okay. Enough of my promo. So we are going to go into our featured patrons this week. I'll go ahead and start. We've got The Author's Guide to Ebook Publishing by Chuck Heinzelman. This book is all about ebook bundling. Ebook bundles will expand your inventory, increase your discoverability, and most importantly, create additional income streams. Learn how to bundle, what to bundle, and how to bundle. Discover pitfalls to watch for. That is An Author's Guide to Ebook Publishing.
Our second featured patron is We Own the Sky by Sarah Crawford. What could you create if you fell in love with a muse? When the original Greek muses wake to find a world in which the internet has given everyone the tools to be an artist, a battle between traditional and new methods of creation ensues. As Sylvia discovers how she is connected to the world of the muses, she learns that this war may put her music, her love, her very life at stake. And that's We Own the Sky by Sarah Crawford.
That sounds really fun. I love that premise. Love a good premise. Okay.
Number three. Love a good premise.
Yeah. Business and Politics, Leadership by Mildred Stallworth. The question has always been asked, do business and politics mix? It's a matter of opinion. Looking at the meaning of both, the answer can be yes, no, or maybe. There's a grave difference between the two. Business is an entity that can be spoken to for one person or a group of people. Politics is a political entity using actions for purpose. Politics is all about a collective group of people. Okay, That's Business and Politics, Leadership by Mildred Stallworth. So let's look at this week's last week's question of the week. And that was, what is one 5-minute task you could do to promote your book today? Becca, I'll let you start with that first one.
So P.A. Mason said, a little while ago, I turned my book cover into an online jigsaw puzzle. Oh my gosh, I love that. And embedded it into a blog post titled, Uh-oh, I Broke the Cover. It wasn't all that tricky to figure out. And aside from using my 5 free minutes, it gave readers something to do in their spare time.
That's great.
I love that.
Tracy Krimmer said, as I'm writing this, it's Monday, the day of the week I send my newsletter. I link my newsletter up with both Twitter and Instagram along with my Facebook page. I try to use catchy headlines and typically use a sales graphic I've created in Canva. Twice now, I have readers comment on Instagram that they bought my book upon seeing the graphic. So it does and can work. Great.
I love that. Connie B. Dowell said, I've got a sale going for one particular book at the moment. One easy 5-minute task would be to post about it on social media. Yep, absolutely.
I always forget about that. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got a sale running. Great. And then I'm like, oh, I should let people know.
Yeah.
All right. So we will head into the tips of the week.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, mindful marketing. Can less is more work when it comes to marketing? Author and website designer Pauline Wiles says mindful marketing can not only work, but is necessary to protect your energy and serve the audience you love. Quote, for meaningful productivity, you need to minimize busy work, which often results when we jump on the content creation or social media treadmill. She argues that mindful marketers should remain true to their values and focus on marketing that gives them pleasure in connecting with their audience and passing on marketing tactics that feel icky. When it comes to social media, try being active on just one or two that you enjoy, not all of them. For most authors, promotion will be a marathon, not a sprint. And embracing that early is important if you want to last. Quote, my philosophy is that less is more underpins every project, says Wiles. I encourage my clients to pare back their content and keep their websites minimal to hone their main message and focus on the visitors' needs, not their own. So what do you think about this, Becca?
I'm high strategic, so I think that's great. Why do work that isn't going to yield? And there's always the tipping point, right, of like diminishing returns. So for me, I'm super cautious of the diminishing returns, especially questioning the premise of whether just because somebody says you should do it means you should do it, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's two schools of thought with the social media. There's focus on one or two. Well, I guess there's more than two. There's always more than two schools of thought.
There's
focus on one or two, and then there's be everywhere to cast your net as wide as you can. And there's also who cares, right? There's that school of maybe this isn't the most effective way to sell books. Like, yes, it can sell books, but there are better ways. So where do you fall on this, like with your own marketing?
For me personally, I mean, I'm super social, so I definitely see the benefits of social media. If I wasn't me, I would think differently. So like when I give advice to other people, I always ask them first how they are using it and stuff, which is, I think, where she's headed. But I mean, I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere because I love it. And I actually see the returns because I'm super conscious of the metrics of like, when I do this, does it affect, you know, sales and et cetera? So like I would say for myself, I'm a be everywhere person, but I rarely give that advice to people. What about you?
You know, I have such a love-hate relationship with social media just on a personal level that, you know, I'm kind of everywhere, but some of it is like personal stuff and then some of it is professional stuff. And I try and separate out the two, but it leaks over when you're an indie. So it's like my Instagram is really like a personal one, but if my readers want to follow me on there, they totally can. It's just going to be pictures of my dogs.
Yeah. Which I love personally.
Yeah. I know. I hate how many likes my dog's pictures get. You know? I'm like, oh, but I worked really hard on this book and none of you guys liked that picture.
Right.
It's not a cute dog. But yeah, so I'm kind of all over the place, but then I have sort of these flare-ups of wanting to get off Facebook forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
I don't have a super strong social media strategy.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it drives me crazy, because I am that high strategic like you. And for those listening, when we say high strategic, we're talking about the Cliff
Notes
strength. Yes. Becca is a master of this. It's so ingrained into her mind. She forgets.
Yes. I forgot. I'm like, oh, right. I forgot to say, this is what I do.
Very awesome thing.
Strengths. Yeah.
So, we're talking about specific strengths. So if you want to like just jump in, how many strengths are there total that they?
34. Yeah, there's 34.
30.
And strategic is one that both Claire and I have. And so I always know she's going to get what I'm saying when I say as a high strategic, I think this way, because like I'm always conscious of all the different ways I could be doing something and then what's at the end of each one of those paths. And I think, you know, for the evaluation purposes, it makes it easy for me to make decisions, right? Because I know, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. So,
right. Yeah. Are you one of those people, this is totally off topic, but are you one of those people who, if you go to a store to shop, you can immediately just kind of hone in on what you want? Like, that's not going to work for me. That's going to work for me.
Yeah. Unless I'm there to browse, like if I'm specifically there to browse or to waste time, then I don't. But like, otherwise I'm very much like, yeah, I know what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Yep. Are you like that?
I totally like that.
Yeah.
My shopping trips are about 5 to 10 minutes. You know, I'll go and I'll try it on. Nope. We're out of here.
Yep, exactly.
I've have a complete attack strategy anytime I
go. Yep, me too.
Just curious if that was a strategic thing.
Yeah.
So let's move on to tip number two, and that's to you.
So why buy? Why should I buy your book? Quote, have you ever been asked this question? I have numerous times, unquote, writes author Sarah Bohm of marketingchristianbooks.com. Readers need a compelling reason to part with their money and their time and want to spend it in ways that benefit them in some way. Quote, you need to be crystal clear about what a reader will get from reading your book, writes Bohm. In order to craft a compelling reason to buy, you need to answer these three questions. Who is your target audience? What pain or problem does your book solve? What benefit does it bring to the reader? What will the results be of reading your book? So once you've answered these questions, you have all you need to create a compelling case for your book and plenty to use in your book description, on your website, and in all your marketing materials. Give people a good reason to invest in your book. It's smart marketing. And speaking of strategic, that sounds totally strategic, right?
It does. And you know, these are kind of the things that we all sort of know, but it's so easy to forget when you're crafting your message, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is probably more for the nonfiction folks, the nonfiction out there, who I know I apologize for neglecting you guys. You know, I'm more fiction, but I think it can also work for fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just although not you're cut.
How many readers are conscious of the fact that what I want to get out of my fiction book is blank, right? Like, and so in that case, I would say that might be a little more esoteric, unless what you want out of your fiction books is a quirky sleuth that's you know what I mean? Like, if you're that conscious of it, but I'm not sure that fiction readers are that conscious about what they want. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think I am as a fiction reader. Mm-mm. Honestly, I'm way more conscious of what I'm doing as a writer than as a reader.
Yeah. Well, plus I'm not sure I would trust the writer to know, right? That's probably part of it. I'd be like, just tell me what the story's about and I'll make the choice, buddy. But when it comes to nonfiction, I do want to know what problem the book solves.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm really picky about the nonfiction that I read. So if you're not communicating to me in your book description, what problem that I have do you solve? Then I kind of check out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever read nonfiction just for pleasure?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you?
Almost exclusively lately.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. I'm just like, I need information. I need to learn something, you know? So that's, I know that it's like, I want to figure out what problem it is, but lately it's just like, this is an interesting topic and it gets good reviews on Goodreads. So it's going in my, on my list.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm choosier when I have less time.
Yeah. That's probably true too. Like more strategic when you have less resource. That makes total sense to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else on this?
No. I mean, I would say, I love this idea. And then like to me, I would use the actual language. Like if you're nonfiction, I would use the literal language that your people tell you you do, right? Like I would actually ask them, because one of the things I learned about resonant language, and I know you talk about this, about chemicals, right? When you resonate, it's literally like when I hear my own words back to me, I get so much happier. It's like, oh my gosh, I've said that thing and you're going to help me figure this out. So I would actually use their own language when you're talking about your nonfiction.
Pro tip. Pro tip.
Pro tip. Yes.
Okay. Number three, I believe that's me. Tip number three, walk this way. Walking isn't just good for the body. It's good for the brain, says author Jay Thorne. While better physical health has long been accepted, a Science Daily report titled How Walking Benefits the Brain showed that walking and running increased blood flow to the brain, triggered by impact with the ground. While Thorne says there are good reasons to walk or run hard enough to work up a sweat, not all sessions need to be grueling. Quote, as a career author, I also use walks as weapons to slay writer's block or general writing ennui. Quote, end quote. Thorne has different types of story walks, all done without wearing earbuds or headphones. That's so crucial. One walk he uses to solve plot problems, while the second he uses for idea generation. Thorne credits these walks for the premise and high concept of his Barren trilogy. Quote, I also enjoy productivity walks. These tend to focus more on my business than my craft. I might have a product launch or podcast coming up. And when I take these ideas with me on the walk, I almost always develop even more interesting ideas.
Yes. I mean, Claire knows me, of course, well enough to know that I have capital O opinions on this topic. And I cannot underscore enough for certain type, for certain personalities of people. Mm-hmm. If you are not walking, driving, running, biking, riding somewhere, you need to, but for brain reasons, literal brain science reasons, right? Like you absolutely need this too. So in addition to what he describes as the physical and blood flow, yes, 100%, but also there are people who can't make words in their manuscript without some form of this. And they need to do it in order to write. So yes, 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 yes.
Yeah. So what kind of person do you think has to do this?
So the people who do their best work when they can process first. So if you're the kind of person who you tend to not be able to think on your feet as quickly, right? Like the person in the meeting who's like, hang on, let me think about that. Mm-hmm. And then they walk away and 2 days later, they have their literal most insightful comment ever. And they couldn't give it in the meeting because they needed to process it. That's not a weakness. That's a strength. And trust me, I'm a strengths expert. And also that type of person actually produces words. It's like having a forge in your brain where you are forging from the rock while you are writing. And it's crucial to certain kinds of people. Yeah. Yeah. Are you like this?
I am sometimes. If I can't get my head wrapped around a concept yet, then the walking is crucial. If I can't understand the bigger picture and get that bigger view, absolutely, I have to go for a walk. And so, I mean, I like to go during the hottest part of the day because I like to, and this
you like to sweat.
This may just be the Texan in me. Yeah, I like to sweat, but not like from actual exertion, right? Yes. I don't need to be sprinting. Nobody's chasing me. Yeah, I just like, it's kind of just this, I don't know why. It's kind of this grueling thing. And when I come back, my head's clear. And it's like, well, if I can get through, you know, an hour and a half out in 105 degree heat, I can for sure sit down and write something, you know? So it's sort of like a crucible type thing of just like, I do a little punishment to my, you know, and then hydrate and get back to it. But yeah,
suffer for my art.
Absolutely. That's where I think my best jokes, where I think my best concepts, and like I'll get on Instagram sometimes and just like, you know, spitball some jokes while I'm walking. And that also gives me the sort of social interaction that I need. Mm. So yeah, I'll kind of double up. But when I really need to solve a problem, it's like phones in the pocket. The no earbud things he mentions is
so crucial.
I mean, how many, it's rare that people get silence nowadays.
Yeah.
Although I will say, pro tip from me being antisocial, you can put the headphones in or headphones on and not listen to anything, and nobody will talk to you. Yeah. That's what I do.
I agree.
Keep people, my neighbors from saying anything. I can just straight up ignore them and keep walking.
I agree. I just point at my ear, right?
Or just ignore them and just kind of fiddle with it so they know that it's in there. Yeah. Okay, yes, definitely walk. So now let's move on to our top story.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Dilvo Reisch. Indie publishing is still a land of living wages, says Roger Packer on his blog. According to Amazon's 2020 Small and Medium Business, or SMB, impact report, over 1,000 indie authors have earned more than $100,000 in sales in 2020 as of May, with thousands more earning over $50,000. Though vague on how many thousands more, it's clear that Kindle Direct Publishing is on the rise, thanks in no small part to more people staying home and reading their ebooks. The new reading habits have also caused an increase in the KU fund and a month-to-month comparison of January to May 2019 to 2020 shows nearly a quarter increase in the monthly pots this year.
All right. So we've got good news coming out of KU. People are still reading.
In case you were wondering.
Yeah. And they're reading more and they're, see, I view this as like, okay, people are starting to think of themselves more as readers now. Because that's really what KU is for. It's for the people who think they're going to buy more than $9.99's worth of books a month or read more than that. And if you look at like the national statistics of adults, you know, those scary ones where it's like people don't read books after high school. Yeah. This seems to be kind of a transition. That would be my guess without being able to see much of the data, because we don't get to see much of the data with Amazon, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's always the issue too. And again, you can use that to tell data to tell one story or data to tell another story, right? And this is the Becca thinking in the big picture terms of like, okay, well, how many books are there on the Amazon store? More than 7 million. Well, great. How many are making a living off of that? 1,000. Because, you know what I mean? Like, because, right. And even if you say thousands means more than 2,000, which is what Becca assumes that it means is 2,000, because they don't give you the numbers. What I hear is still, it's extremely difficult to do that because everybody knows when Amazon reports its numbers, that's what they pay you. But that does not include what you pay them to advertise or what you pay Facebook to advertise or what you pay BookBub or your assistant or your cover artist or whatever. So if you're making $50,000 a year, you're not making $50,000 a year. So again, are people making money? 100%, yes. But are 100% of people making good money? No. So like data can tell two stories. Well, more than two, but at least two.
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't even tell one story.
I know, right? I'm like, what does that even mean? Especially because in the article, so I went and read the article. In the article, they lump into that SMB group, not just KDP authors.
Right.
Like the SMB article is actually about all small and medium businesses. So I'm like, well, hang on a second. Yeah. I'd always heard, right? So like, it was just, it was interesting. It was really an interesting article.
Yeah. And that's one thing I'm really, people might say what your opinion on this is cynical, but I think it's very realistic and I think it doesn't sell false hope, which I love. I love
right. about you. Thank you. yes. And it's not that I don't think it's possible for people to make money. Like I have to be super clear. The clients that I coach, a lot of them make good money, but a lot of them don't. And when they don't, and they come to me and ask, why don't I make more money? Everyone keeps saying that everyone's making six figures on Amazon. And I'm like, but are they? Like there's 1,000 people making six figures on Amazon. That's not a lot. There's 100 and some thousand writers out there. So that's
and it's revenue.
But anyway,
it's revenue.
Yeah, clearly I have a, yeah.
I like to tell people if someone shows you their revenue without showing you their expenses, you yeah. are under no obligation to keep from rolling your eyes and walking away. Because yes. it's if you can make $100,000 if you don't care what you spend.
Yes. Yes.
It's there. Yes. You know, it's there you. For the picking. If you want to open yeah. up some credit cards and really rent it up and
yep. you know, pay. But for those who think I'm cynical, there are thousands of people making, yes. you know, thousands of dollars. So yes, could you be one of those people? Is it possible? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is it likely? No. Like Becca's mean, I'm horrible and evil, but no.
yes.
Okay. I'm going to stop now. Like I promise.
You need to pair your financial goals with a sense of purpose.
Yes. Yes.
Almost.
And I'll be honest, the people I coach who are doing well when they do make money are all so responsible about how they manage their expenses. And so that's the takeaway for me is okay. The majority of people who are making money are making less than $100,000. And so that means if I want to live, I have to be so cautious about how I spend my money.
Yeah. Cause you know, if you're making $50,000 for a lot of people, if that's your profit each year, that's livable. In most yeah. places.
In most so cities, yep.
If you just want to make enough to pay your bills and keep writing, that's totally doable. I'm glad we had a yeah. little reality check here. I hope it's not discouraging yeah. for people. I know we get feedback sometimes about how the success stories throw people off because it's like, you know, sort of like, I did it, you can too. And then people are like, well, then why am I not? And
yeah, why am I not? Yep.
So
I'm like, I'll tell you why, but you're not like the answer. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, right. Like there are answers. I mean, I could make a lot more money if I was willing to compromise a lot of my values.
Yeah. Or your health or.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, I have done that. I have made a lot more money by compromising my health. Would not recommend it, actually.
No.
One star.
So, yeah. One. Yes, I agree. I agree completely.
All right.
But I love you all. You're brilliant. You're going to make $1 million. Okay, we'll end with that, right?
Just slap them across the face with some food. Let's do it. All right, well, let's jump into the next one.
Number four.
Flippin' hell. I think that's the first time I've cursed on this show. You can't judge a book by its cover if it's turned around. Book cover designers were heartbroken to learn that brick and mortar bookstore Waterstones is displaying many books back to front on shelves and tables. Waterstones has offered apologies to designers, but say they are displaying books back to front so browsers can read the blurb without picking it up. Currently, people can pick up a book in Waterstone, but if they do not buy it, the book will be quarantined for 72 hours. Designer Anna Morrison said she could see why it was happening, but it was still, quote, a little sad. Designer Suzanne Dean said she understood, but wished the books could be displayed front and back, side by side. Quote, the front cover is a mini poster for your book. It's our job on the front to grab the reader's attention. You have a lot to convey in a small space and only a couple seconds to attract the browser's eye. It is an important thing, and we are all striving for something that is creative, unique, and striking. Another designer, Jamie Keenan, whose recent covers include Joyce Carol Oates' latest, said she liked the idea of walking into a bookshop and seeing things from a different angle. Quote, it will be interesting to see what books sell based on their back cover and if it makes a difference. This is a weird one for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
First and foremost, this was the solution they came up with.
Yeah. I wanted to say, really?
Yeah, exactly. What are your thoughts on the rest of this?
Well, so my local bookstore did something interesting. Like they try to display both at the same time by having cards so it covers the cover just a little bit. But it's a card that has the blurb on it, right? And it's an indie bookstore. And so, because I think the research that places like Nielsen and Barna do about what makes book buyers buy is always cover and blurb, right? It's never just blurb. It's never just cover. It's always both. And so for me, I feel like someone in Waterstone didn't have enough ideation to think, is there another way that we could do this, because they're going to need to see both anyway. And the blurb is the seal on the deal. I just don't think people are going to be any smarter by looking at blurbs only, right? Like I get the quarantine thing, but I'm not sure that it's helpful. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I always, when I browse at a bookstore, I go to bookstores to luxuriate in books.
Yeah.
If there's a specific book, I go online and I get it. But it's like when I'm browsing, it's okay, I'm going to go into, you know, like the mystery section or the fantasy and find something that really catches the eye or the true crime, you know, and that's where I start. If it was just all blurbs, then it just comes down to like cover color, because it's not a rational thing when you have a big display ahead of you, what your eye focuses on. It's not. Mm-hmm. Not conscious.
Yep.
So I think that's interesting, but I don't know that this is like the way, like what?
No.
It makes no sense just like about viruses. Like maybe have like an outdoor book display or something, you know, open air. I don't know. This just seems like.
Outdoor book display is a great idea. I love somebody in the article brought up, could you display them side by side so you could see both? And I'm like, that seems even more logical, because like the honest truth is you're going to quarantine just as many books by hiding one half, right? Like you have to quarantine the books. I would say find a way to do both, but God bless Waterstone. I'm sure they're trying as hard as they can. This is not meant to shame anybody, but I had a moment of like, really? Did we run that? How high did we run that up before we made that decision?
I feel like I would just leave the store with no books. I would be like,
me too.
Much decision making. Like, yes. I don't want to read 1,000 blurbs. I want something to pull me in. Yes. So I guess then it would come down to more like positioning of where, like, you know, front table is going to get a lot more reads. And you could just print out like a picture of the front cover and stick that on the shelf, you know, something to like attract people. But
so there was an actual study that was done about, and I, like I said, I can't remember if it was Nielsen or Barna who did it, but when I read it after it happened, it was fascinating because they timed the average amount of time that it takes someone to decide if they're going to read a book or not. And it literally goes cover and blurb and then first chapter. So like, you're not even really solving the problem because people still haven't really made the decision until they read inside the book. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like you just have to take a knee and say, we're going to have to quarantine some books here.
Yeah. Or, you know, provide gloves. I hate to point out the obvious, but like I went and voted and they gave you the little like finger glove thing. And it was, I was like, this is genius. This is all.
Yeah.
Like, when I leave the house now, all I do is just touch things with my pointer finger anyway. I'm like, ooh, and just, so I'm like, great. I've got my little glove, take it on and off. Yeah. Well, they're trying.
Good work, Waterstone. Nice.
Proud of you guys.
Proud of you. You're doing great.
All right, let's move on.
Number three.
Lockdown lust. It wasn't long into the coronavirus quarantine that lockdown erotica started to appear, says The Guardian's Pierce Anderson. Quote, as billions around the world went into lockdown, some people had seemingly found a new inspiration in isolation, end quote. Quarantine-related works quickly started to appear online and erotica writers began to self-publish lockdown romances on Amazon. Authors faced a troubling challenge. How on earth can you make a global pandemic romantic or sexy? Quote, I don't think there's anything explicitly sexy about the pandemic itself, but any extreme situation is going to bring about fascinating experiences to explore in terms of sexuality, end quote, says author Ian Snow. Add in isolation, boredom, and plain physical need to the mix, and you've got a recipe for some pretty hot stories, end quote. Voyeurism, sexual tension brought on by close proximity, and Zoom, of course, feature prominently in many stories. Author Kethandara, who writes erotica professionally, says that earlier in the pandemic, his publisher balked at the idea of coronavirus-related erotica, fearing ridicule. But 3 months later, it's a different story altogether.
So we do not cover a whole lot of erotica news on this, but this was too good to pass up.
The article called it quarantarotica or quarantotica or something like that. And I'm like,
Of course it's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody adapts quicker than erotica writers that I've met. They're on the trends.
They're on it.
They're not afraid to experiment, as it were.
No.
So
it was popular. Uh-huh. Like there were some writers who were like top 100 in Amazon writing it. So it was popular.
Right. And even just in romance, people are starting, you know, just like cleaner romance, people are starting to jump onto this trend. Yeah. Do you think that you would want to read a lot about quarantine?
No. No. Again, we go back to the question of, does a reader know why they read? Most don't. I am super clear about why I read fiction, and it's to escape reality. So I don't want a lot of reality in my fiction. And it's why I read a lot of fantasy, sci-fi, and, you know, things like that where there's no reality or there's an alternate reality, right? Like, I don't want to be reminded about my bills when I'm reading romance or mystery or whatever, right? So like, I for sure don't want to be reminded of isolation because I'm extroverted. But what about you? Would you read
a
quarantine book of any kind?
Personally, no. This is, I want to forget about this. Like, as soon as it's done, as soon as it's safe to come out, I want to pretend that it never happened. That's my main approach. And I'm also already kind of like, oh man, every story that people write later on that takes place in 2020 that's at all realistic is going to have to include this. And I'm writing a series that right now it's set in like summer of 2018 for book one, but it's going to be jumping forward. And I'm like, do I have to address this? Yes, I have to address this. And I'm like, I don't want to read about this. Like, this is so boring. Yeah. You know, I can already imagine just all of the like journal entries from pandemic diaries that are going to be included and stuff that talks about 2020.
Time capsules and history books.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did consider writing a quarantine mystery because I actually feel like that would be fairly interesting as a like forced proximity kind of Murder on the Orient Express kind of thing. But I'm sure that someone is already doing it. And so like, I don't feel the need, but yeah, I don't know if I would even read it. Like you, I would like to collectively repress this whole last like 6 months. Repression exists for a reason. Embrace it. Uh-huh. Let's forget it.
It's protecting us. Yeah.
Yep.
But I guess there are a lot of people who want to read it. And you know, I don't read a lot of erotica myself. I edited it like in droves for a long time. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it now.
Super high stakes. Right. And that's the other key is like, it absolutely created a lot of stress and a lot of conflict. And so of course, fiction, like what do we write about? Essentially stress and conflict. So it makes sense that that would be a setting, but yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I'd love to hear from people who are reading it and what it does for them, right? Like, does it help you to deal with it? Does it help you to like, because I just can't, for myself, I can't see that.
Yeah, I don't, it may be the same kind of thing as like why women love true crime. It almost feels like preparing for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. Maybe something like that, like preparing for the
that makes sense to
worst
me.
Case scenario of romance. I don't know.
The worst case scenario of romance. That should be the tagline now on the quarant erotica. Yeah. Quarantomance, romance, whatever. I love that topic though. That fascinates me.
Yeah. You can always kind of gauge trends by what erotica is doing because they get there first.
Yeah. Yeah. They're super early adopters. Yep.
All right. Moving on.
Number two.
100 libraries lend 1 million books. Library ebook rentals are growing 30% this year. So far this year, over 105 libraries in the US, Canada, Europe, and Australia are on schedule to loan out over 1 million ebooks. While digital circulation has been growing year over year, many of them have doubled their online checkouts in 2020. Leading the way with over 4.4 million ebook checkouts is the Toronto Public Library. Six other libraries have more than 3 million checkouts each, and overall, the top libraries have amassed nearly 130 million checkouts already this year. Quote, libraries around the world are still finding ways to connect readers to books through their digital collections, writes Michael Kozlowski of Good eReader. Quote, Overdrive's instant digital library card has enrolled more than 300,000 patrons through the Overdrive websites and Libby app, generating millions of additional checkouts that otherwise wouldn't have occurred. End quote. If your books are not in the library system yet, you can enroll them via ebook distributors such as Draft Digital, Smashwords, and even direct through Kobo Writing Life. Yay, libraries!
Yay, libraries! We knew they would save the day. That's what always happens, right?
Do you read ebooks and stuff through local libraries?
I don't because I have a KU subscription. And so I don't find that I need to. The only time that changes is when it's a specialist book. So the thing I love about libraries is they'll spend money to get like the good versions of things. And so I'll occasionally go check stuff out that like I can't get anywhere else or like it's a special edition of something. But I do enroll all of my books in library programs. And I've definitely seen my sales go up in the last 3 months, my reported sales to libraries go up.
Yeah, that's great. I check out books all the time. That's where I get most of my books is from the library now. Once I figured out that the Austin Public Library hooked up with Overdrive, I was like, oh, this is great. I do read a lot on KU. I have a KU subscription myself, but some books, especially, you know, larger, like trad published books, some of my nonfiction cravings, you know, I'll want to get them an audiobook and I can get that from the library. So That's great. The fact that it's so easy to get these books is fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. And thank you, Toronto, for leading the way, as always. Love Canada. I love that librarians recognize what a service that reading is. Like, that's been the coolest thing to see through the pandemic, is that people are super acknowledging how art helps us cope with stress. And I have loved seeing like artists step up, and writers and actors and directors step up, and musicians, and say, we need to provide as much as we can for you, because what you're dealing with right now, you need a break, right? And so I love the free resources that have multiplied. Has been awesome to see.
Yeah, it really is just like such a lifesaver, because you can get so caught up in social media if you're not doing anything else. Yes. Like, if you're stuck at home and the social media, and then using news as entertainment, which is never good for anyone.
Yes.
But to be able to just that focus. I mean, I don't know about you, but my brain feels 1,000 times better after a half hour of reading than it does a half hour of social media or news or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard the greatest quote at the beginning of the pandemic, and he said, his name is Stephen Furtick, and he said, the news is meant to be checked and not watched. And that blew my mind, because I was like, yes, that's why my brain feels so tired when I get caught up. And it doesn't matter what the news source is, it literally doesn't matter. But the news is meant to be checked, not watched, and then read more, right? Like, that is my, because I'm exactly like you. Like, I lose myself in books, and I think I need that more than I used to. Yeah, for sure.
It's that freeing moment of being able to separate from your identity. That's, I think, what it's sort of like, oh, thank God, I can let my ego go. You know, that sort of like, you know, traditional sense of the ego, just kind of like forget about who you are and be outside of yourself and existing outside of yourself. It's, oh, it's so good. Yeah. So, I mean, Draft to Digital, Smashwords, Kobo Writing Life, get yourself in the libraries if you're in those.
Yes. You know,
if you're distributed wide. Another benefit of wide distribution.
Of wide. I agree.
Speaking of that.
And now the number one top five news item.
KU Uncovered. Amazon has finally added KU page reads into the Amazon Ads dashboard. In a recent email, Amazon Advertising explained the new feature. Quote, to help our authors better measure the impact ads are having on their Kindle ebooks enrolled in Kindle Unlimited, we've added KENP, or Kindle Edition Normalized Pages Read, to your performance dashboard. End quote. This feature, long awaited by authors and really, really ridiculously good-looking Amazon ad expert Brian Cohen, should help advertisers determine whether ads are effective by showing the volume of pages read after customers click a sponsored product ad for a KU book. Amazon notes that these numbers are estimates and only show those pages attributed to the ad campaign that are read within 14 days of the ad click. For full KENP numbers, check your KDP dashboard. The KENP read metric is automatically enabled and requires no action from authors, and is only for ad data reported as of July 15th, 2020.
So when I first saw this, I got really excited because I thought, oh, this is going to be a complete game changer. But then I kind of had to remember that the reporting has never been super great on AMS. So I don't know. How do you feel about this?
I mean, in theory, it's a great metric, right? In theory, I love the idea. So I'll be really interested to see what Brian has to say after he's used it for a while and he gets a sense for how accurate it is. Because I remember when we first started getting more metrics on the AMS ads dashboard, and we would hear from some of the experts like, well, but it's not super accurate. And so here's how to tell what the accurate numbers are. So, I mean, if it works, it would be incredible. But again, the question that I would ask is, are authors going to accept the data? And then what does the data mean? Right?
Right. Two great questions. And it sounds just the statement that Amazon is giving about this is kind of like, now bear in mind, we're under no obligation for this to be accurate.
Yes.
It reads very much like that to me, at least.
Me too.
As you know, they kind of have said this so much with the ACOS. So for those who have run Amazon ads. The actual cost of sale is a metric that they give you that shows, you know, how much you're spending to make whatever. It's the percentage that you're spending versus what you're making, and is not super accurate. And that's been verified multiple times by smart people who, you know, you can take a book that's not selling anything, run ads on it, and then see on your dashboard, your KDP dashboard, how much is actually selling versus your ads. And you can presume that your ads are selling everything that you're making because you were making no sales before them. So that sort of thing. And, you know, I've checked this out and I've looked at the KENP numbers on the Amazon dashboard, and they seem very, very low, like compared to
me. What'll be interesting is now that we'll have some time, like post change, to kind of compare what our ad data says versus what we're getting paid for. Like, that'll be an interesting thing to see if there's any difference at all between those two things. And then the other piece that I wonder about is, because this is something a lot of authors will ask about, like, well, how many of those page reads are at one time or by one person, or on average, are people reading the whole book or not, right? And a lot of studies have been done to say, no, most people don't read more than 50% of any particular book that they read. And then why is the question? And this is why I asked, are authors going to do anything about it, right? Because the people who sell millions and millions of page reads per month, or, you know, quarter or whatever, they have a good idea of just how compelling their books are to the reader. And people who do less than that have kind of a questionable idea of how compelling are my books. And so to me, like, if I was getting low page reads, that would be an indicator for me about how compelling my story is, and I would make changes. But is everybody going to utilize that, or are they going to try to market harder, right? So I don't know. I mean, I'm up in the air about whether this is a good metric for us to have or not.
Right. I would say that just relying on the actual data you have on your dashboard is generally going to be a better decision, better data to use. I mean, I know I use ReaderLinks, and so they will import all of that, and you can, they have a really cool report where you can see your read through rate, and they'll compare pages read, you know, and they kind of make the assumption that book one, everyone reads 100%, you know, like they divide the total number of pages by the total number in that book to see like how many books have been read. So that there's a little bit of guesswork with that. Cause like you said, most people don't make it all the way through the first book, or, you know, a lot of people don't make it all the way through the first book, but you can get a better, I feel like that's going to give you cleaner data than this dashboard, but it's still kind of a fun feature that it's like, hey, they actually listened to what people wanted.
Yeah. What I'd love to see them do would be to actually give us data that's helpful in a way of like, and to take the interpretation out of our hands. I feel like that would be more helpful. So for instance, like for them to tell me your average reader read 12 pages of your book and then stop, or here's the point. Cause this was something that Goodreads, the staff at Goodreads brought up once in what they were hoping would come out of the partnership between Goodreads and Amazon, was the ability to help authors understand reader habits better. Because Amazon's the one who has all that data, right? And I'm like, I would love for Amazon to give me qualitative metrics about what it means, like how many readers read all the way through, what page do they typically stop on, like that kind of stuff, because that could actually help me. But otherwise, you know, I just don't know. Most people don't read data in a broad scope well enough to make decisions based on it. So
great.
I don't know if it's helpful, but
make decisions based on too little data.
Yes.
I see that a lot too. You know,
it's so like, I'll be great really if interested to hear what Brian says.
Yes. It will be interesting. I see authors kind of talking about it, but the ones who, you know, have been doing this a while are approaching it with a healthy skepticism. So
yes,
it's how we should all approach it.
I agree. We should all approach all data with a healthy skepticism.
True. True. Yeah. True. True. All right. Well, we need to come up with a question of the week.
So
Were there any stories that really stuck out to you?
I mean, everything had a fascinating element to it. I think the question that I would like to know the most is, what would you like Amazon to tell you? Like, if you could have a magic eight ball and shake it and be like, okay, Amazon, here are the questions that I would like for you to answer for me about how my books perform. What would you want to know?
I love that. Yeah. So what metric? What metric would maybe be a business changer if Amazon could provide it? I love it. That's great. That's a great specific one. And I'm very excited to see everyone's answers.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to have to come back next week and find out what all the answers were.
Absolutely. So you can respond to that question on the sellmorebooksshow.com, sellmorebooksshow.com. Go to this episode, episode 330, I believe, and scroll to the bottom of the thing and there's the comment section. And we would love to hear from you. If you leave a comment, you will be entered for next week's draw for the Supercharger Story course. Don't forget that we thrive off of good reviews and positive feedback over here. It makes us feel good in our feels. So if you can take a little bit of time out there and just leave us a review on iTunes, we would really appreciate it. We're getting a few more here and there, and we appreciate all of your support. So Becca, do you have any final thoughts?
Thank you for having me. I'm sad to miss Brian because you guys are fun together and I love listening to you, but I'm happy to stand in for the really, really ridiculously good looking Brian. He wrote that copy, I'm pretty sure, by the way. That was the most awesome movie reference that I have heard today. And so I missed seeing Brian, but it was great to be here. And as always, the permission to be controversial is something that Becca needs, because I do like to question the premise. And so I appreciate the great news to comment on. It was a lot of fun.
Great. And do you have anything fun people should know about coming up with Write Better Faster?
I have fiction books coming out, which is probably the most fun for me, because I write something, and I do not recommend this, by the way. Writing genre mashups is the worst, but it's unfortunately what my brain does. And so I write what I like to call grimdark cozies, which are definitely not cozies. If Criminal Minds and Jessica Fletcher had a baby, that's what my books would sort of be, with the pastor main character, which is hilarious, by the way. So I have a book coming out in September that I'm pretty excited about. And otherwise, it's almost business as usual on the nonfiction platform. And I know you guys are also like this, right? Helping authors. There's so much to do right now because so many people need help. And so it's just, you know, wheels on the bus go round and round time, I think, for us.
If people do want to find your stuff, where should they go?
I would go to Better Faster Academy, all one word, and that's BETTER, betterfasteracademy.com. And our YouTube channel link is there. All the information about my books and classes and stuff is there. And yes, the first book is called Dear Writer, You Need to Quit. And it's a little crazy when you see the title. I promise you, I'm not trying to get everybody to quit writing, regardless of evidence to the contrary on this podcast today. I am not trying to do that. But yeah, I write the quit books and we have the quit cast. And so it sounds a lot like I have an ulterior motive, but I don't.
Knock out all the competition.
Like, that's the last thing I want. But
your stuff is great. Yeah. I love your books. I took your Strengths for Writers.
Strengths for Writers.
Yes. And that was fantastic. I loved it. You're brilliant. What you do is brilliant. Everyone should go check it out if they have not already. It seems like everyone has checked it out, though. Everyone I talk to, smart people.
Yeah. We are getting a lot of writers coming to us now, which I love, because we're all about, like, similar to the alignment piece, right? I'm all about, let's figure out how to get you to do what you're the best at and not worry about the other stuff and be healthy and safe and also successful, which is a lot to ask for, but you know, why not shoot for the moon?
You do it. Everyone I talk to after they've worked with you guys is so much happier in their career. So I think that is great. So thank you again for being on this week and filling in. We would love to have you back. So that's it. That's all I got. Another great week in the books. So thank you for joining us. And I will see you next week back with Brian again for episode 331.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!